The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
I stand at your gate, madam, on time, 7:30, Saturday, as requested. It's cold. It's taken time. 2 hours to be exact. To wake, to wash, to walk. Taxi 1, bus 1, taxi 2. To walk. At your gate, 7:30, Saturday, on time. As requested. Your convenience, madam. But you forgot. You are sleeping. Your phone is off. What must I do? Shout? Will you hear? Hundreds of years of frustration, servant, servitude, at your gate. 7:30, Saturday, on time. Waiting for you to wake up. Change is coming. For you. For me. But I suspect that while your color may change, I will still be at your gate, waiting for you to wake up. But you, madam, will still be sleeping. But I am, madam, on time. So this is a poem about domestic workers by Robert Werter that was published at the beginning of July this year. So, Tuliza Cindy, hello.
Hi, I'm Shizzle. How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good.
What do we think?
I find it so interesting the tone that you use to read the poem, because it speaks of a perpetual frustration at something that is a consistent occurrence.
Mm.
And yet I can imagine that that's probably the tone that a domestic worker would use if she wanted to bring it up with her madam.
Mm.
So, and then also just the amount of times that she would probably say madam in the process of explaining how, you know, something needs to change.
Mm. I do find that in general there is a quiet or a quietness about the anger that domestic workers feel. And I don't know if the blatant anger has been subdued by circumstance and by power dynamics. And also, at the same time, it feels like there's a certain apathy and exhaustion, like you're saying, right? Like a tiredness about it.
Yeah. And, I mean, the writing style is like breathless sentences, you know, like 3 or 4 words per sentence.
Mm.
So it's just, it's so abrupt.
But there's also, like, I think, a respectfulness. It's the worst thing I feel to balance, you know? And I certainly feel this way in African culture because we're taught to respect our elders, you know? Sometimes I'll feel frustration with someone who's older than me that I feel I have to respect. But actually, like, I'm just fucking angry. You know what I mean? And I feel like I want to be disrespectful and kind because I feel disrespected, but I can't. So you have to balance the indignation and the anger and the frustration with a level of respect. And it's the most frustrating thing.
Yeah.
It's the most frustrating thing ever.
And who does it protect? Because it's interesting, like, a lot of the times we'll say that the person that hurts someone else, you know, they didn't know that they were hurting them. But at the same time, it's that these kinds of actions are the things that protect the one that hurts the other.
Mm.
You know, so, like, if someone's domestic worker is going to them with this kind of tone, poised, respectful, would that person ever know how much it hurts them? Would they ever know just the extent to which this is a difficult situation for them? You know what I mean? And it's so unfortunate because it really just protects. It's ironic because the person who is being hurt is protecting the one who isn't being hurt.
Mm, but at the same time, unfortunately, the truth is that they're protecting themselves and their livelihood. You know?
Yeah, but
because their job is under threat. I do find that a black female tone, though.
Completely.
And maybe decreasingly as we kind of gain our emancipation and we find ourselves and we stand in our strength. But historically, you know, if I think about the way my mom would address my dad sometimes, she never lost her composure, and she still doesn't to this day. No matter how livid she is and how maddening he is, never loses her composure, you know? And when my grandmother talks to my dad as well, his mother.
Oh, his own mother. Mm, oh, wow.
Takes a lot for her to lose her composure. Really? And the anger comes out in her words, because you can hear that what she's saying is angry or hurt. But there's a composure about it.
But I mean, aren't we considered crazy if...
Yeah, of course.
Or just too emotional or irrational.
Mm. And that's females in general, right?
Yeah. But I mean, can you imagine then the weight of that for a housekeeper?
Mm. Dude.
It must be crazy.
There's just so many things like restraining you at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also think then there is something generationally that's passed down.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, I think you've got to be aware of.
Mm.
You know, because it's something we just pick up.
Yeah.
From the women who raise us.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I thought was, I mean, sad but also poignant is Saturday. You know, that this was happening on
Saturday.
So
speaking of Saturday... For me, I think what resonated with me most and haunts me most increasingly about this poem is that the most devaluating thing you can do to someone, even beyond grossly undercompensating them, is to disrespect their time. And I'm finding that in my own life. Because that, to me, in itself is economic exploitation, right? Mm. And we've often spoken about how time is our greatest commodity. You buy sliced bread, right? You're paying so you don't have to make it, and so you don't have to slice it. Time is like one of the fundamental things that we pay for. And that also makes it probably one of the fundamental things we have to trade as people, right? To like earn a living. And so for that to be disrespected is mind-blowing to me. And it's done over and over and over again in this industry.
And then, I mean, the way that it highlights that it's taken her 2 hours, to be exact, to walk, to wash, to walk, taxi one, bus one, taxi two. And for some, that is a quick route. You know, for some, that's a quick journey. Mm.
It's crazy. And it's a thing that doesn't get taken into account enough in this country, but particularly in this job. And we've seen again and again how difficult logistics are for domestic workers, because public transport is rough. You know what I mean? And especially if you have multiple jobs. For instance, you're a domestic worker, you work in 3 different homes, and then you live somewhere else in a township. It's extremely hard to get around, and you probably have kids, you know, and maybe you have to pick them up, and your life must happen alongside.
Yeah.
So it's really, really, really onerous. And I mean, domestic workers are underpaid in general for a lot of things. But I think even if they were paid, the thing that might still not get taken into account is how long it takes a domestic worker who doesn't live in to get to work. You know, I was talking to our helper the other day, and she was saying, because we live in a complex, and so she works in multiple apartments in that complex. So she's able to charge a little bit higher. She was saying that she left her house at like 4 a.m. the other day. And it's winter.
You know how susceptible they are to rape?
That's the other thing we have to consider here, is safety, right?
It is absurd.
Right? Women in general in this country are under threat constantly. So if you're leaving your house before dawn, that's another element. So she's leaving before dawn to get to work at 6.
I mean, I've had students who have chosen willingly to be late for university classes so that they don't get, you know, mugged on the way to university. Mm. But, I mean, they can make that decision because they're not going to university to earn money. Mm. You know, they, like, they can still get their degree.
Mm.
But, you know, the repercussions for a domestic worker just saying, I'm going to arrive late because I might get raped.
Mm.
You know, I mean, so many employers just literally cut that hour or two worth of wages out.
They absolutely wouldn't take it. And the other thing is, like, if you're not paying me, you see, if I choose to take public transport, then the onus is on me, right? To make sure that I arrive on time because it's my transport of choice. But if you're not paying me enough to buy a car.
That should be a discussion that's had, actually, because it's a terrifying reality. What I also found interesting, though, was the word wash. So to wake, to wash, to walk. Mm. And wash, I mean, a lot of times is associated to lower income earners that don't bath and they wash. So I thought that was also an interesting
detail to add. I thought, gosh, and this guy is white and he's channeling all these things. Yeah. And we must talk about that later. But there's a functionality to wash. Yeah. It's not fun. You know what I mean? So I think it emphasizes the practicality and the necessity of what she's doing.
Completely.
Rather than something she wants to do. You know what I mean? There's still something about, like, oh, I woke up, I took a shower.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That speaks to a certain privilege.
Mm. Mm.
But to wash.
It speaks to a certain rhythm.
Gosh. For me, there's just nothing sadder than the fact that she then arrives to someone who is sleeping.
Oh, and can't, and isn't picking up her phone.
I swear, the way we disrespect, and I will include myself in this because I certainly have in the past, and it's something I have to think about more and more and more and more. And we've spoken about how the problem with domestic work is that it's not regimented, and this word domestic work is very loosely applied. It could mean any range of activities in the house in any number of hours or days or months. And essentially, like, even if you have some kind of a schedule for your domestic worker, and you agree when she does things and how long and when she knocks off and whatnot, usually that isn't the case, right? We do, in general, just expect domestic workers to do what we need when we need it. Even keeping them waiting. You know, I don't know, as an au pair, how many times, like, a domestic worker has had to knock off late because the parents weren't home in time.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. That's shady.
That happens. It's a thing. It's a thing that happens.
That is so terrible. That is so terrible.
Think about this. Think about employers who take their domestic workers to restaurants with them to mind the children, right?
Mm.
Like, even that, it's just, and then often they'll even put her at a separate table with the kids. Like, you just don't respect this person's time. They're just literally, they may as well be like a limb. They're an appendage.
that's not a far-fetched analogy, though. It isn't. And I mean, like, also, like, the amount of times that in here it says as requested, I feel so uncomfortable with that because, you know, it's that although, yes, this is one of the ways that her time is taken from her, she still wants to tend to their needs. I mean, I don't know if want is the word, but
she has to. That's the job.
It's just so uncomfortable because I just don't know how autonomous that decision is.
No, it's not autonomous because I feel like whenever you say to somebody, I'm here as requested, or I've done something as requested, there's an implication that you're not doing it because you want to. And then the Saturday thing, yo, I mean, speaks to, like, how they don't even get weekends. So for me, when I read that, this became a poem about time. It made me so angry. And speaking of time, so it's clearly set in the way he's written it, it's set during apartheid, right? Because he kind of foreshadows that nothing will change.
But
he's almost written it reflectively, so he would have to know that nothing will change, except that maybe color. Employers will become more diverse in color, which is in fact what has happened.
Yeah.
Right? And this really frustrates me because it almost feels as though racial equality was supposed to fix a lot more than it actually does. It feels like by the time we get to racial equity, we're going to need to have a TRC for classism and a number of other things. You know what I mean? And that's not to take away from the importance and the urgency of racial equity. But, like, there's just so much more, you know?
And I think it was a very important point to make that, you know, like, color didn't change the power dynamic.
Mm.
The color change didn't change the power dynamic. We tend to become what is most acceptable in each class that we climb into. I guess it really speaks to, like, just an existing status quo that we tend to subscribe to.
Mm.
Or,
you know, and the other thing for me that's sad is that, like, the change doesn't speak to the fact that domestic work still exists and working class jobs still exist and people are still poor. You know what I mean? It's not an economic thing for me, right? Because I think that those jobs are still important. For me, it's the nature of the relationship, the interaction. You know, it's everything else. It's like, it's the power dynamic, like you're saying.
But
the shame, the indignity, the way that we treat domestic workers.
But
that's
know,
what hasn't changed.
But you know, at the same time, like, I think about just employees in positions that they don't want to be in. I know, like, I'm a terrible employee. Like, I shouldn't be, on average, employed because I just suck at it. Like, I can't take orders.
Girl.
I'm trying to hurt somebody
somehow
all the time.
I suspect that you're better than me.
Friendo, like, it's mind-blowing to me. Like, I had really patient enough bosses, but I always knew, like, in those positions with the nonsense that I was pulling, that I wouldn't tolerate it of myself. Mm. Like, I would have come hard at me if I was my own employer. Mm. And so it wasn't necessarily, like, I didn't imagine looking down on myself, but I would have been hard on myself, you know? And so I wonder as well sometimes if, yes, the color may change, but if inherently that position that your employee is filling is terrible, unpleasant, she doesn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of character that's embodying that role, whether those tensions then arise because you're trying to have your employee be the best employee. Your employee doesn't necessarily care to be the best employee because she wants more out of life and feels stuck. Do those power dynamics masked as power relationships play themselves out also as a reflection of something being fundamentally wrong with the fact that someone just feels completely stuck in their position?
You get cases where, like, domestic workers are proud of their work.
Yeah, completely.
You know, and they get on with their employers.
Yeah.
And they go above and beyond, and not because they're under threat, because they want to. You know, because the employers are bringing enough to the table, be it financially, and, you know, that's not even often the case. Often a domestic worker can still be paid, like, what the very low standard is, but get so much out of the way she is received and treated in her home. You know, and the support she gets in other ways.
Mm.
So I think...
Yeah, it does depend, definitely.
I think it absolutely depends.
But then what I find interesting is this one literally, like, hit me to my core. What must I do? Shout. I find that very ambiguous, actually, in that, yes, it applies to this moment and these kinds of moments, but it also feels like it applies to their everyday existence in that role in general, that they are not heard.
Precisely. And that's precisely, I think, why I read it in that tone, even though I wasn't thinking about it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because I've obviously assimilated so much through this process of understanding domestic workers in the industry, you know, and connecting with their stories. Because I actually don't know why I read it. I could have read it in any tone, right? I could have, like, shouted. I could have been sarcastic, facetious. but instinctively, I read it that way.
It's so spot on. Because then the line that follows is hundreds of years of frustration. And I think, is that the weight that she's carrying when she's standing by that gate that the madam is not carrying?
There are two sets of people here who have inherited behaviors.
Completely.
And mindsets, right? Whether or not the madam realizes it, and she probably doesn't, she has inherited a certain, you know, it's become a norm to her.
Yeah.
But she's certainly not necessarily to blame as an individual, right? It goes further back. It's generational.
But if the room to tell her that that is wrong is never available, when will she ever know? You know, if this is always the tone that will be presented to her, when will that oblivion end? You know what I mean?
No, but it's just, yeah, I think it's entrenched on both sides, because then she, maybe this is the first time this particular madam ever treats her this way, right? But she is a domestic worker. She's been a domestic worker, and she's been a domestic worker. She carries the weight of all domestic workers. So I wonder to what extent, like, even if you've been a domestic worker for 2 months, to what extent does the weight of the legacy affect you and your attitude? Just knowing.
I would imagine that maybe when, like, you feel unable to be honest, you know,
Do you think, I almost think it probably kicks in automatically. And I've often thought about this.
I don't think it does.
I've often thought about this. Firstly, when I became an au pair, but then when I started to think, would I be a domestic worker? When I became an au pair, I was a much less vocal and assertive version of myself. The minute I became an au pair, like, I would almost go from my house, where I had absolute freedom, and from my social circle and my background, right, to then being in that role in someone's house, and I felt instantly that my power was diminished.
Because, you know, like, some will tell us that, yeah, like, they walked into the role, they had confidence and stuff, and then, you know, the boss decides that they're going to start checking their rooms randomly without letting them know. And then they're going to all of a sudden, you know, split the cutlery that they use, and, you know, and then those things start to affect.
But I feel like I might automatically accept more abuse and more of that kind of inhumanity if I filled that role. You know what I mean? Because I would feel like the role, something about my behavior and the expectations of that role precede it.
But equally so, there's something about the way that the bosses behave that can prevent that. You know?
But in the same token, the way that the bosses behave, also, when you employ a domestic worker, there's something about being a madam or an employer of a domestic worker where you might be just the most generous and equitable person in other aspects of your life, right? But because of the status quo and the nature of the madam domestic worker relationship. I mean, I take, like, my family, for instance, right? We've always paid our domestic workers fairly, but fairly within the parameters of a really, really unfair bracket pay scale. And, like, I feel like we're good people. My mom's always been such a kind and giving person. You know, she really helps people out. And she's always been good to our domestic workers in other ways and provided support and, you know, like, just allowed them to take, and even the word allowed them to take liberties. Can you hear how I'm speaking? Do you see what I mean? And this is, like, I'm conditioned this way. But now I obviously, like, I hear myself, and I think that's the important thing. But there's something about the way you speak, the way you think when you employ a domestic worker that precedes it as well.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been one of the most dangerous misconceptions about injustice, that if you're nice, you can't be unjust.
Mm, absolutely.
That's a very unfortunate thing, you know, and that you're also not necessarily evil if you are unjust.
Mm.
You know, that it's not a reflection on like what you are as a person, because sometimes it's just having subscribed to the way a society works, the way it operates.
And I almost imagine, just to make it a little bit like slightly controversial, it's almost like those Afrikaans people or white people during apartheid who had black employees who they thought they treated well, but the system was unjust. So when the system changed and the expectation changed and the standards changed, they couldn't identify anything wrong with their behavior, you know? So they would still do things like maybe give their employees food that was left over and maybe not the best quality and think that was an act of kindness, because at the time they were doing better and they were trying harder than the people around them.
Now this is where I'm on the fence, because maybe it was like the pay scale, right? We could talk about societal injustice or sleeping quarters, right? Because you get a house, that house has built sleeping quarters in there. You're inheriting sleeping quarters, you know, things like that. But when it comes to like giving someone rotten food, like that's an individual decision. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's an individual decision. I think that depends on how much humanity you attach to somebody. And if you come from an era or a society where certain individuals, black people, had less humanity, then in the same way, and this is like, you know, this is so deep because there's nothing right about it. I'm just trying to highlight that it's conditioning, because that, you know, you learn to think that they're inferior and this is what they need.
Okay, so then they get cut some slack there, but then post democracy, people are telling you, this is wrong, this is unjust, this hurts us, this is not generationally sustainable for us. Every single damn thing.
No, I think
you can
once
ever possibly told is being told to you. And you're still, and then it's not even that, I mean, fine, I can understand when people don't want to be wrong, but to defend it to the death.
Yeah, so there, I can't excuse that. So if you know and you've been told, right, and if you're somebody who just doesn't live under a rock in a democratic South Africa, and you read the paper, you know what I mean, and you're aware of
and
the changes.
And get surprised that there's racial tension.
And you're aware of the changes that must happen, the changes that are being demanded, then I don't think, and the changes that are just, I don't think you have any excuse, but I think that there are certainly people, and those are the people I'm sad for, right? The people who don't have the awareness, the people in you know, the older generations in small towns who kind of haven't had the exposure, as much of the exposure to freedom and to democracy and to equity, where I can, like, I'm not saying it's right, but it must be tricky for them when what is treating someone well on one day is completely wrong the next day. It must just be a difficult transition. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, I want to ask with that, though, because sometimes, yes, I do understand, and I remember in university I used to say that a lot, you know, like, I can understand the conditioning, I can understand a lot of people were doing things they had no idea they were doing, or they didn't know what they were subscribing to. But then I think as well about white flight, right? When in 1994, a lot of people got really scared, a lot of white people got really scared and fled the country. They thought black people were going to kill them. You know, they thought there was going to be mass violence, civil war, whatever it is, they thought. I would imagine if you didn't think you were doing anything wrong, you wouldn't imagine repercussions like that towards you. So how is it, what did they imagine they were doing that warranted a civil war? So I'm again on the fence about like just how much was conditioning and how much was playing out something that you knew was hurting other people.
But I mean, it's hard because it looks exactly the same.
But I think I'm also at a position where I think, okay, irrespective of what was the past, there's a certain level of responsibility worth taking. And it's not for the sake of feeling perpetually ashamed or guilty, because that's not productive whatsoever.
Mm.
But it's just for the sake of being aware with like the way that we treat each other, mm. or, you know, the ways that some people get more benefits at work than other people, or, you know, threat towards domestic workers, things like that, right? Like everyday social engagements, mm. are the things that sustain what was put in place legally before.
Mm.
And if we keep denying it, we'll keep like playing out those power dynamics and sustaining them. And that's literally like where I'm at. Like, I don't care. I don't care that, like, you know, you don't want to carry the past, whatever, but you're doing things right now. Mm. And right now is actually the greatest potential for us to create something.
No, absolutely. And by no means do I think that any conditioning can excuse treating somebody with inhumanity at all, especially not in 2017, where, like, you're constantly bombarded. You know, you just have to leave your house, really,
mm.
you know, to be aware
mm.
of this country. I guess I'm just saying I'm not angry. I'm like, I'm not upset with you, but I don't excuse you either.
What I did find really interesting as well, though, and this is something that I've actually thought about for like the duration of the time that we've done MADE,
mm.
is that we've also always spoken about madams, right? And like, you know, when we reviewed the Help mm. movie, we did speak about the men. The men tend to be somewhat afterthoughts in that relationship, right?
Mm.
Like they play secondary roles, but never really the direct role.
Mm.
And also with the madams that we've interviewed, but I think that's a feminist issue.
Mm.
You know, like that in a way, the injustice on domestic workers tends to fall on the madam.
Mm.
That this is a common knowledge thing, right? Yeah. We don't have a word.
Like we're being scapegoated.
Yeah, like we don't have a word for men in that relationship.
Master. But that's obviously
but when is,
like
when
been
was, I mean, there's comp- boss. There's boss.
There's
in,
boss
in this country.
Yeah.
But like we tend to, you know, like we'll use boss more with garden boys.
No, but the fact that the word madam has sustained.
Yeah.
There's something in that. Sure. And all of that from a poem written by a white guy in 2017. I think that's pretty awesome. Big ups to you, Robert. I really hope we can get this guy in studio. There's such an accuracy to it. That's a bit like uncanny or unusual for a white guy, you know, and certainly, you know, we've always said that, like, men are usually perceived to have little to do with the space. So for him in particular to have this kind of insight probably has a very, very powerful backstory. And it's, like, quite a – there's not a lot of words in this poem.
Mm.
Which creatively is so brilliant
mm.
that it can actually lead to such a rich conversation, you know? And I think I don't even think we've scratched the surface. I think every single word, every full stop mm. Was very carefully considered. So this guy is like quite a G. And yeah, with that, I think that's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us on the MADE sessions with Placental.com. Aww. That's so bizarre. That was Siri. She was clearly listening all along.
Thank you, Siri. And yeah, as Siri would advise you, please follow our Twitter page at MADE Project, MAIDE Project, as well as our Facebook page, The MADE Sessions. And we look forward to catching you next week. Have a very good afternoon. Bye.
Bye.
Cliffcentral.com.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.